This is F1 Debrief. It's not really the same team at all. Coming up on this show, we discuss regulation changes, flight training, who's who at HRT, plus Paul's performance report.
Sebastian Alonso is now P2. Your face is good.
Did he just say, your face is good?
I'm pretty sure he said, Alonso is P2, your face is good.
Face is good. Face is good. Face is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, your face is good, Sebastian. Is your face good?
Doesn't matter if he's winning the race, as long as his face is good.
Face is good.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for French F1 fans as the Prime Minister, François Fillon, has set up a GP task force which will include the exiting boss of the Paul Ricard circuit, Gérard Nouveau, Renault team boss Eric Boullier and ex-cabinet minister Gilles Dufrenoir. They aim to bring the French Grand Prix back to F1 as the last one was in 2008. Apologies for all those names.
I like this story. More French from you, please. I did notice, I think Joe pointed out that the plan might be to get the French Grand Prix to alternate with the Belgian Grand Prix, because the Belgian Grand Prix famously have absolutely no money at all and year after year suffer from lack of funds and lack of income. So you might get a French Grand Prix, Belgian Grand Prix, French Grand Prix, etc., etc. Don't know where they're going to host it, though.
But I wonder, I mean, alternate races never seem to work for very long. The Japanese one didn't work out so well.
Nope, German one, that didn't work out so well either.
It's been a bad week for Ken Block, as the World Rally driver had plans to test the Pirelli X Toyota car, but has had to scrap them after it was found he was too tall. I found it a bit surprising, because Pedro De La Rosa is their current test driver, and he's not exactly a shorty.
No, that's true.
Reports suggest he could sit in the car okay, it's just that his legs were too long, and they're currently looking for alternatives.
He was never going to make an F1 driver with that kind of body shape, was he? I'm really disappointed, because I wanted to see what he could do. He does some great stuff with a rally car, and all sorts of things. I mean, in any kind of car, he can make dance to his tune, except for a Formula One car, because he's too tall.
It's been a good week for Mark Webber, who has decided he wants to learn how to fly and has been promoted to the cockpit of an A380 as he does so. Australian airline Qantas said they would help Webber get his pilot's license, and he was allowed into the cockpit of the A380 with an instructor. I don't think he was allowed to fly it, though.
The A380 is the biggest passenger liner in the world. It's the biggest aircraft. Yeah, it's the great big thing. I think recently it landed in Paris and it crashed into a building, lost the end of its wingtips.
Was Webber flying that one?
No, he wasn't. But even experienced pilots can still crash those things. That's the thing. If you're at all serious about obtaining your pilot's license, you wouldn't start with the biggest aircraft in the world.
It's definitely being thrown in at the deep end, isn't it?
I think it's just marketing.
It's been a bad week for Jenson Button as the McLaren driver fell off a jet ski and hurt his knee.
Aww.
Which meant that he couldn't take the F1 car up the hill at the Goodwood Festival of Speed this weekend. He does say he'll be fine for the British Grand Prix, though, and he was really just being a bit precautionary more than anything else.
I don't believe a word of this story. I just don't think he fancied driving up the hill. The last time he went up the hill, he broke the car, didn't he? I just think this time he thought, nah, it's not for me. There must be some way out of this. I will say, though, Tony Oliuzzi 2 weeks ago did win a jet ski competition. He didn't fall off. He didn't hurt his knee. He beat the Spanish media.
So you're saying Liuzzi is better than Button?
That's the only conclusion. It's the only conclusion one can draw from this.
News and views.
There's lots of talk of regulation changes in the air, some of which are happening, some of which aren't. We had engine mapping changes that we'll talk about later. Ian Parks from Sporting Life magazine tweeted, finally, after a marathon GP in Canada, Whiting and FIA might also look into introducing a maximum time for the race. Which is what you're asking for.
What I was complaining about.
Yeah.
People listen. Goodness me.
You think Charlie Whiting listened to the show?
Yes. And is now going to act on my suggestion. Clearly.
Whiting also said the FIA will look into whether teams should be allowed to work on cars when a race is suspended, as occurred
also
in Monaco.
A complaint so that of
was
this podcast.
All our problems solved.
Oh, what are we going to complain about next, then?
That's a good question.
I'll tell you, that's an interesting thing, though. That either we're quite in tune with what Formula One fans like, or more than likely, a lot of people find those two facts annoying. But it makes a change for the FIA to listen, because normally they would just blindly carry on, not taking into any of this into account, and just do their own thing. So it's good that they're listening. It's good that they might fix these problems.
It did only say he's looking into it. They might do absolutely nothing.
I will take that as a done deal, if it's okay with you. Fixed. Problem solved.
If that makes you feel better.
I don't know what we're going to talk about next week, though.
Pirelli boss Paul Hembree has also waded in, and he said he wants a change of tyre regulations. He said, at the moment, if you don't set a time, for example, in Q3, then you're able to choose the tyres that you start on. It means people could be saving a set of tyres because then they would be better off in the race. I've made a suggestion to put to the sporting working group to say that actually in those circumstances, you should be made to use your Q2 tyres in that situation. So there's no advantage from not setting a time.
Hold on a second. We complained about that as well.
Well, I don't know. I don't think we complained. I thought we said that Schumacher was a little bit clever, a little bit sneaky.
That's true.
In
but
doing
we,
it.
That's a fair point. He did. Which race did he do that in? It was a couple of races back.
We Spain, do complain when the drivers don't bother running in Q3 just because it saves them tyres. That's not good. But what I really like about this, whether anything comes of it or not, is that Paul Hembree is wading in saying, you know what, this is not right. We want a change. I mean, you wouldn't have found Bridgestone fiddling with the regulations like that, would you?
Proactive Pirelli. I like it. But you're right. It doesn't solve the major problem that we have with qualifying at the moment, which is you do a run halfway through the session, you sit in the garage, and Vettel gets pole because, you know, he's already put the banker lap in and there's no fight to the finish. So it's not going to solve that problem. He is preempting an issue that didn't really happen. I mean, Michael Schumacher didn't gain a huge advantage in Spain because of his decision. And in future...
We did see two cars sitting out in the last race as well. They didn't bother to...
Also true. Yes.
To run in Q3.
It's not. It's great that he's doing this, but it's not the big problem with qualifying.
Yeah, but he can't fix Vettel's car so that it doesn't get pole every time. But what he can do is say, these are the problems that we're seeing that we can deal with.
Good. Well, good for him. He's a good man, that Mr. Paul Hembree. I salute him.
There's been more news leaking out about the coverage of Formula One in the UK and whether the BBC will continue to host it or not.
Shock. Horror. This came out of nowhere. At first, I was highly suspicious that this was a Rupert Murdoch plant, that he was doing his best to undervalue Formula One, the operation that he potentially might be in line to buy. That doesn't appear to be the case, though. In hindsight, it looks like there's merit to this story.
Yep, both Joe Saywood and Kevin Eason have both confirmed there is something to the speculation that the BBC won't host coverage potentially even after this year. They might stop.
They may draw
at the end of this
season.
Draw
it to an early end.
And there's talk that it could go to Channel 4, or obviously discussions have talked about Sky and that previously.
This obviously only or primarily affects UK viewers. So you and I, but obviously a lot of people listen to Sky podcasts elsewhere in the world who are thinking, I'm not really that interested, not really that bothered.
Well,
about
I do
this.
Think a lot of countries get the BBC coverage shipped out to them.
Some of that commentary may suffer. The issue, the root of the issue comes down to the BBC's need to save an awful lot of money. The BBC is obviously funded by a licence fee, and they've been told that will not increase in the short-term future, and therefore they've got to make costs in order to meet their budgetary requirements. And it seems to be, it's come down to a toss-up between Formula One or an entire television channel known as BBC Four.
Yeah, well, Lord Paton, who is the new chairman of the BBC, he said, I think we're bound to face some tough decisions in the area of sport. It's extremely difficult for the BBC to bid for as many sports rights as it would like. So given the choice between running this BBC Four channel for a whole year, a whole channel, which I think it's only on at night time, like it's one of those that starts at 7 p.m. or something.
Yeah, we were watching it last week, though. I mean, we do get use out of that channel.
Yeah, it showed some Glastonbury coverage that we quite enjoyed. But it's a whole channel. Or Formula One, which is what,
20 weekends. Yeah. Yes.
They do speculate that Match of the Day and Wimbledon might be untouchable.
And so when it comes down to sports, you're just left with Formula One. That's
how much
big...
you're left with. I mean, they also do the boat race, but that's just once a year. They do quite a lot of horse racing.
I suspect they pay quite a lot for Formula One as well. Mm. If you can run an entire television channel or for the same amount of money that you can cover a very short sports broadcast for half a year. It kind of shows just how much Bernie is charging. Now, he might offer the BBC a deal whereby they pay less, but the way I'm reading this, it does, unless it's free, it's not cheap enough.
I think Bernie would be prepared to do a deal if it was between keeping it to open to everyone as opposed to Sky packages.
It's definitely important for Formula One teams that the sport remains on free-to-air television, because the risk is, if it's not on the BBC... ITV have already given it, had it before they gave it up.
They've got no money.
Channel 4 don't have a lot of money either.
No.
And that leaves you with just one channel in the UK. And therefore, if you don't have it on there, it could end up on pay-per-view
television. Well,
don't
forget Channel 5. They exist.
Yes, they have less money than you and I put together. Oh, okay. You know that? They really have no money whatsoever. So the risk is Formula One could end up on pay-per-view television, and the risk there is less people will watch. And currently Formula One teams and their sponsors rely on lots and lots of eyeballs in order to make sure you get the greatest market penetration so that your brand is seen by the most people. And if that doesn't happen, the economics of the Formula One business model suffer because sponsors will pay less money, teams require, you know, sponsorship money. It could be that if Bernie offers the BBC a better deal, the teams lose out because it, you know, Bernie doesn't ever lose out in a deal, so he'll probably just hit the teams over the head and they'll get less money. It's gonna be interesting to watch, but it doesn't look like it's good news for the likes of us.
No, it's also interesting because the other side of it is the BBC, part of the BBC's reason for existing and the unique way they're funded is that they can cover things that normal corporate companies wouldn't be able to.
Yes.
And I think if you're going to throw up like Formula One versus Wimbledon, it seems like Wimbledon is so entrenched in the BBC and the way they cover it. Whereas we know that Formula One can be covered elsewhere. We've seen it on ITV.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, what you could argue is the BBC should maybe have the rights to cover the British Grand Prix, because they don't cover the entire Tennis World Tour. They just cover the one British event.
Yeah.
So you could say that the British Grand Prix should be on free to view television for British fans.
But you're never going to get just one.
It's going to be impossible to do that. I cannot see that happening. We'll have to wait and see. If Formula One goes to pay-per-view, we have no choice. We have to pay for it. We don't have a satellite dish. I'm not sure we can even install one, which could prove to be problematic. I'm slightly worried that if Formula One moves to Channel 4 or another channel that cannot deal with high-definition broadcasts, the purpose of buying our new HD TV and watching Formula One in glorious high definition is just going to go right out the window because they don't have the infrastructure to cover that. So there are changes ahead for UK viewers, unless Bernie can come up with an exceptionally good deal for the BBC and they decide to stick to it. But it does look like their time for broadcasting the sport has come to an end.
It didn't last for very long either, did it? Just a couple of years.
It started with a bang, but it sounds like it's going to fizzle out. Qualifying. This will be short.
This is going to be a very short section because free practice 1, 2, and 3, nothing really happened.
Really not of note.
No.
Quite one of the quietest three sessions this year.
One thing I did notice was the coverage, which I'm assuming is World Feed and not BBC.
Mm-hmm.
It finally says what tyre a driver is on, which is
really
helpful.
We complained about that too. I'm telling you, people are listening.
Get over it.
Everything we complain about, we asked for that, and I appreciate that the tyre information was shown not as frequently as I would have liked it, but on occasion they would tell you what the driver was using.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago they do at the start of the race they put up the top 10 and what tyres they were on, mm-hmm. which is very useful as well, although they're usually all on the same one.
Yes.
But now they're, when you're watching a driver do a lap and the time is counting up on the screen, it also says what tyre he's on, which is very useful.
Much appreciated.
The big speculation going into the European Grand Prix weekend was this engine mapping thing that was going to bring Red Bull down to size and Vettel wouldn't get pole and it was going to be brilliant.
This was the change mandated by the FIA that you cannot now adjust your engine mapping settings between qualifying and the race. In Parc Fermé, you cannot plug a computer into your car, fiddle with the settings and get it set up for Sunday, which makes sense to me because the whole point of Parc Fermé is your cars are fixed.
Why wasn't this a rule before?
Yes, all your bits are fixed, except apparently you can still do stuff with the electronics, which sounds crazy. So it's good that this regulation has been brought into force. It's bad that nobody thought about it during the winter.
It's also quite bad that they brought it in like 3 days before
yes.
the race began. I mean, that's just a bit cheeky.
It's not good to see people fiddling with the regulations midway through the season, especially when it looks like they're doing it because the championship is already getting boring. It smacks of race fixing, and the FIA will be hard pressed to argue against it. But they are saying that their reasons are just, and it does seem like a perfectly acceptable excuse for making this change. I just wish, why can the people not consider this before the season gets going?
Yeah,
because Red Bull dominated last year. And you could probably have figured out that's what they were doing.
If it depends. I mean,
Parc Fermé is watched. Everything you do in there has to be, there are stewards in there keeping an eye on you, make sure you don't change things you shouldn't do. They must have been able to see that the computers were being changed.
So this weekend, it made no difference at all. Vettel still got pole position by a good margin. Not as much as he has in the past, it's fair to say, but still, he was still ahead of everyone else.
It made no difference to the end result.
No.
And I did catch, I think, the last 15 minutes of qualifying, and that was 15 minutes too many in my book.
Well, you did say you weren't going to watch it, and then you were going to watch it, and then you wish you hadn't, so... Yeah,
I wanted to know whether it was viable to miss qualifying and whether or not I'd miss out on too much information. And then the regulations changed and I just had to see what difference it would make. And the answer was nothing.
There are more changes coming at Silverstone, though, aren't there?
For Silverstone, there are changes to the hot and cold blown diffusers. And I think, is it hot?
Is this also aimed directly at Red Bull?
Yes. Is it going to make any difference? No.
I'm surprised that Red Bull don't say they feel like they're being picked on a little bit.
Well, some of the team have gone on record to say that, but it's the part of the team that you generally don't want to listen to because he's called Helmut Marko, and you can generally ignore everything he has to say. He was slightly unhappy that he considered the rules to affect his baby boy and his chances of winning the championship. They didn't make any difference, so he might as well have kept quiet. The race. Shall we discuss the one incident of the day?
You just like qualifying. There wasn't that much going on in the race either.
Petrov ran over Michael Schumacher's front wing.
Yep.
What do you make of that?
Well, Schumacher ran wide across the line, the white line at the pit exit. So already he was
wrong.
And then bashed into a Renault.
Yes.
My favourite Renault.
It was pretty much a racing incident from what I can tell. I really liked that when Schumacher had lost his front wing, he was coming out of the pits. He had to do a whole tour of the circuit to get back and get it repaired. He managed to overtake somebody.
Yeah.
I think it might have been Kobayashi who had gone slightly offline. But I don't recall anybody passing another car when their front wing was falling off.
Is he going to be your driver of the day again?
He's the only person who did anything. That's worth noting. Apart from that, there was no controversy. Lewis Hamilton, he didn't crash into anybody.
No. Nope.
Where's a man you can rely on for, you know, spicing up the afternoon? Safe as houses, that man. Never put a foot wrong all day.
He did say before the race that he was going to think twice before overtaking, but I'm not sure he even had an opportunity.
It was nothing he could have done. He didn't have the fastest car. Same with Jenson Button. It really was... I mean, I liked... There was a bit going on at the front.
The battle between Alonso and Webber was interesting.
They passed in the pits.
It had potential.
Back. There was a bit going on. It was the best Valencian Grand Prix I've ever seen. If that counts for anything. However, it was nothing compared to what we've been used to this season.
No. We have a lot of thoughts on this, both in this show and on the post I put up rating the race. It's definitely worth checking that out if you have an opinion on this race, because there's lots of thoughts in there, whether it was good,
link in the show notes,
bad. Absolutely. Perhaps we should have a voicemail from someone who didn't think it was that bad.
Hello, Lucky here. So Valencian Grand Prix, and I know I'm not, a lot of people aren't going to agree with this, but I really didn't mind it. It didn't bother me in the slightest. It wasn't the best Grand Prix ever. But we've had so many good Grand Prix this year that they're not all going to be great. And Valencia has this reputation of being, you know, not excited, not having the best races. So I'm not sure what people were expecting, to be quite honest with you. But I didn't mind it. You know, they were overtaken. There was action, even though people seem to be completely ignoring this. I mean, there was the stuff with Schumacher in the front wing. There was the battle between Alonso and Webber for the whole race. There was, at the end of the race, there was that little battle with the four cars at the back with Kobayashi. I don't really understand why people are so... Why there's been so much negativity. Maybe because it's Valencia and it wasn't as good as the other races.
Fair point. There was a very close battle. Midfield and back of the field.
Yeah.
It was a good gaggle of cars going at each other.
There were a few laps where there were four cars... I want to say like a train, but not in a bad way.
No, it wasn't. The cars were not being held up. They were genuinely fighting for position. They were getting in the way of the leaders occasionally as they got lapped, but really good to see. And they weren't even points-paying positions. They were just battling for honour. So that was good. And it was clean racing. Nobody took anybody out.
Yeah.
Bit like we saw at Monaco, except that ended in a red flag. Completely different story in Valencia, largely because the track's four times wider. And
four times longer.
Yes, pretty much that's it. Yes, that sums up Valencia really for me.
Yeah. Vettel obviously won. And I wonder if someone else had won, but it still had the rest of the action the same, whether it would have been more interesting. I just wonder whether it was like Vettel again and there was no action. That's a bit of a downer.
I genuinely think, we saw the first time Formula One went to Valencia, it was very, very clear from the first lap of free practice on Friday that the circuit was no good. And I think we called for it to be changed then, and nothing, no one's even attempted to manipulate or tweak the circuit in any way, shape, or form.
Too many corners.
There's too many corners. It's not the right It's an embarrassment of a track. If you have to have a Grand Prix in Valencia, don't put it in the dockyard. Don't put it, you know, 90 degree turn after 90 degree turn, acres and acres and acres of concrete, because it was just boring to watch.
Vettel said he enjoyed winning it more than most of his victories. He said he liked it because it was just him and his car against the circuit, against the clock. But I don't see how that's any different to any of his others. It's not like he's had to battle that much.
He's had two races where he wasn't expected to win. He wasn't expecting to do well in Canada because it wasn't a great circuit for Red Bull. And Valencia wasn't ever expected to favour them on top of the regulation change, which was designed to hurt them. So no doubt he thought he was going to end up, you know, fourth or worst.
Hmm.
And to win it was probably a huge relief to him.
He seemed more emotional than I would have expected.
Yes,
afterwards.
But the thing is, he sealed the deal there, didn't he? That was the end of the championship. I think Lewis Hamilton, Jenson Button, Fernando Alonso, they all sort of threw their cards on the table and left.
People
left the
are
game.
Starting to say, we're going to look at next year now.
Yeah, I think it's official. All of his competitors have folded.
Yeah.
They're done with this season, and nobody likes to hear from a quitter. But let's be realistic. We gave up on it races and races ago. I'm
yeah.
surprised Alonso and the like have held out as long as now. I don't think anybody's going to be able to challenge him. And the season's over and done with. So that's why he was so emotional, because he could see that, you know, that's another world
championship. If they've gone through their difficult races and he's still masses in the lead, then the rest might be quite easy.
It's over and done with.
Yeah. There was a couple of interesting things about the race, though. For instance, the fact that no one retired whatsoever. You said it was clean racing. It was so clean that there were 24 finishers, 24 classified cars. I think that's the first time that's ever happened.
That is. Actually, I've got some TED News on that one. Hold on. Ted Kravitz, after the race, he pointed out that Narain Kartikeyan was previously held the record for the lowest placed Formula One finisher in 23rd, and that record was beaten in Valencia by none other than Narain Kartikeyan, who is now the lowest ever placed Formula One driver. He beat his own record.
So he was
in 24th.
The first driver to be classified 23rd,
yeah,
and the first driver to be classified 24th.
Correct.
It's fun being last, isn't it?
He's the best of the worst. He really is.
Is it a surprise then that he has been booted out of his car?
It's not a surprise to me, no. It was a surprise with who he's been replaced with, though.
Really?
Yes. Mr. Disco Dan. He is in HRT.
Daniel Ricciardo gets the chance to race.
Now, a couple of things about this. Firstly, you've got to say that both Toro Rosso drivers are doing such an exceptional job, neither can be bumped out.
I don't think you could say they're doing an exceptional job. I think what you'll find is they have scrabbled some results together, done their
yes.
hardest to impress the bosses. And Alguersuari, I think, was the one really under pressure recently, and he made it work this weekend.
He saved his ass, didn't he, in Valencia? He went from 18th to 8th in the most timely possible fashion, because he likely triggered whatever points clause there is in his contract that says he can't be fired because he's reached whatever mark it was. And he did that with a great two-stop strategy. Really worked for him. So congratulations to the guy for securing his seat. But then you've got this situation where you've got Toro Rosso and now sponsoring the HRT team.
It's very weird, isn't it? Because clearly Red Bull wanted to get Daniel Disco Dan in the car.
He needs the experience.
Yep. There is no room for him at Toro Rosso despite their best efforts.
Yes. At the beginning of the year, we thought it would be Buemi to be going.
Yeah.
And then as time went on, it looked more likely that Jaime would be the man to be pushed out. But both of them are still there. They stood their ground.
So they are paying HRT to get rid of Narain, who has epic sponsorship from Tata, is it?
Correct. Well, Narain, I think, didn't they say Narain will be back in the car for the Indian Grand Prix? So he's not gone for good. He's still a driver.
Do you know what I like about that? Is that they're not going to get to the Indian Grand Prix and go, oh no, Disco Dan has got a cold, he can't race today.
That would be typical HRT approach, certainly.
At least they're being honest about it.
Fair enough, yep.
So Red Bull are kicking out Narain, who has lots of sponsorships, so they must be bringing a lot of money to that HRT car to get their driver in there.
It depends.
They must have a lot of faith in Daniel.
That's true. But it depends where you think Daniel's going to go as to what the situation, how the situation is going to play out. Because if they're going to put him into Toro Rosso as soon as they can, then it doesn't really make too much sense to give him the experience. He doesn't need the experience now because he can run in the Toro Rosso. So are they planning to bump him straight into the Red Bull team?
I think they're lining him up as a replacement for Webber.
Right. Okay.
Because they don't have that much faith in their two Toro Rosso drivers.
You don't see either of those guys stepping up to the big team.
They were both under quite a lot of pressure and there was no love for them in the team, really.
Mm.
So I don't think that they have the backing that they should have to move up to the big team. Whereas clearly they have a lot of faith, a lot of love And a lot of hopes for Disco Dan.
But then what happens to Lewis Hamilton's plans?
He's not going talk to
He was talking to Horner. Yeah. What do you think he was talking to him
about? I think he was saying, God, my boss is annoying.
You just went in there for a moan.
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't see Lewis coming to Red Bull. You think Disco Dan is going to jump straight into that seat alongside Vettel. I think he'd make a good teammate for Vettel.
I think he would. He's sort of like the next Webber, but probably a little bit better.
Yes. You don't want Lewis and Sebastian in the same team, I don't think. That's not the ideal for team harmony.
If I was a team boss, that would not be in my sights at all.
Fair enough. Okay, well, that's some big changes for Silverstone. And don't forget the HRT, it was last year that they bumped out Bruno Senna for a race at Silverstone. And it's all changing again this year.
So they start. So we're going to see lots of more changes. So at the next race,
you've got Tonio out, and then someone else. No, what will happen? Tonio will go out, Noreen will come in, and then the race after that. Yeah, exactly. It's just the chaos is clearly beginning. They can't go more than half a season without making several driver changes.
I quite like it though. I mean, we don't get driver changes very much anymore. There were times when it was like, oh my God, we're ending the season with a completely different lineup to what we started with. But you just don't get that anymore.
Due to testing being banned, there's no chance to trial out these new drivers. So, and that really is, I mean, that is HRT's saving grace in this situation because they are now effectively the Red Bull test team. You've got the A team, the B team, and now you've got the test team, which will test out the future stars.
Yeah, although I've just realised that I say I like it this year when it's Noreen, who I don't particularly care for either way, who's been booted out. But last year when it was Chandock, I was quite upset about it. So, yeah, I'm quite fickle that way too.
A few more things to quickly mention about HRT. Just as we started recording this podcast, there was some breaking news that they
not really breaking news, breaking rumours.
Okay, breaking gossip.
Yeah.
That the team may have been bought out by a bank that owned shares in them. And also, there was it confirmed that Collis is going to Williams, or was that a rumour too?
I think it was confirmed that he is stepping back from the team. He's not going to be running it day to day. And it looked like the Carabante family wanted more input, although if they've just been.
So
if they've just been bought out, that's probably not true. But I'm not sure it was confirmed that he's moving to Williams, although that does seem the likely place for him.
So it's all change at HRT. It's going to be a complete... Not only did they change the lineup, they've changed the backroom staff and everybody involved with it.
It's going to be a completely different team.
Are they even going to have a chassis to turn up to Silverstone in?
It's a bit like that broom thing where you change the handle and you change the brushes. HRT. Is it the same?
So that's 60 new heads and 14 new handles. It's not really the same team at all then, is it?
Hey, it's Rob here, R-Shuffle on Twitter. Just some comments about the Valencia race. I threatened to tweet or to send a voicemail of just me snoring. I think that pretty much covered Valencia. It was dire. It really was. It was, well, let's look at it this way. The DRS had some effect down the field, but the front, it was line astern. It started, it went around for a bit, and they finished. DRS adding some overtaking at the back, which is like shuffling the decks on a Titanic, waiting for Valencia to hit an iceberg and knock itself off the calendar, please. During the race, I ended up not even barely watching the race. I only saw a few laps. I sort of had that. I tidied my room, did some filing. Anything was better than watching the race. To have this race back-to-back with Canada, it's a great race. It kind of shows both the great bits of Formula 1 and the problems with Formula 1 in quite a sharp light. If you want to show somebody who wasn't a Formula One fan what a great race can be, you would show them Canada.
I think Rob might be a first-time caller, which is always fun to hear from new people.
Yay, thank you, Rob.
Yep. If you want to leave a voicemail,
like
01212887225, or email your MP3s to me, christine@sidepodcast.com. I really like what Rob said about how having the Valencian race directly after Canada is showing the highs and the lows of Formula One. I mean, Canada... The good bit was amazing and Valencia was not so amazing, and whether they should be further apart in the calendar, that might help it a little bit.
That's a good question. I think a snoozer is a snoozer, I think is the answer to that.
Doesn't matter where it is.
Because Silverstone's going to follow Valencia, and obviously we don't know how that's going to play out, but I imagine it's going to be slightly more exciting. Obviously there's a new track and it's all changed there, so we could be in for a terrible show too. It's hard to say right now, but I just think wherever it may be, It's not a good thing to have a bad race anywhere in the Formula One calendar. And the only place where Valencia could be worse is if it opened the season. Mm. That's the only thing that could be worse about it.
I suppose there are a lot of places where you don't want a bad race, so much so that there isn't much room left, because you don't want one opening the season, you don't want one closing the season, you don't want one before the summer break, you don't want one after the summer break.
Yeah.
There's not much room left.
I think where Valencia is the best place for it. Just to be honest with you,
shouldn't
the bottom of the ocean would be even better.
I had an email from Bassano who said, I can't summon up the enthusiasm for a voicemail. In fact, I'm struggling to stay awake from a shockingly dull race. Definitely the worst of the year so far. It's a shame they don't judge who stays on the calendar by the viewing figures at the end of the race. Here's looking towards Silverstone, hoping the engine mapping and EBD diffuser changes upset the balance a little bit. Bored Bassano.
I cannot argue against that. It was... We'll see when I come to rate the race.
Yeah.
What did Bassano rate the race? Do we know?
He said giving it a 3 would be generous.
Now, what I love about doing a podcast so late, we're a week coming a week after the race happens, we get to get everybody else's opinion on what they thought of the race first. So I will take that into account before I give you my official figure.
Yeah. I do like doing the podcast a week later, except that I keep saying this weekend and it wasn't this weekend.
Right. Yes. Matter. We'll see what happened was it was so boring. I slipped into a coma and I've only just come around now.
I also had a message from Rolando, so you may be able to take this into account for your rate the race in a moment. He said two words, hated it. Valencia is a beautiful place and it was more interesting than in the past, but I just don't like the racing there at all. And yet again, Red Bull can't be tamed. It is becoming unfun to watch. If things don't tighten up with the rules changes at Silverstone, I think I might take the rest of the season off. We already know who's going to win it. No point watching, really.
That does bring me to a great post. We must put in the show notes, which was from Chain Bear. And he asked, what makes a great championship? Is it lots and lots of great races, or is it a very close title battle?
Yes.
So in Rolando's case, a close title battle, and if it isn't close, he's not interested. Whereas from my point of view, I'm enjoying the races on a race-by-race basis, so I'm not so fussed about the championship as a whole.
Hmm.
Interesting discussion.
Vettel is obviously winning everything, and that's quite annoying, but it seems like you can maybe take 1 year of that. And you're like, okay, I can watch the rest of the field. We'll see what happens next year. But if it happens again and again, like Schumacher,
yes,
then you start to be like, no, I'm not doing this.
That's
true.
Well, he's defending champions. It's the second year. But if it happens a third year, that might be too much.
Yeah, but he didn't lead the championship at all last year.
No, point taken.
While we're talking about title fights and fighting for the championship, Stephen Huxley sent us a message and he just said, Alonso has given up on the title. Does that mean Massa now has permission to try and win a race? I think it probably does.
Yeah, it must. Do you know what? It must do. He must, the guy, there's no argument there, is there? There's nothing, no chance that Fernando Alonso can complain about anything.
We should probably begin with Paul's performance report from Stephen. He did leave us his one-word report for the Valencia race.
Friday.
I didn't get that one.
Friday.
Yeah, that's not a word. That's a day of the week.
De Resta's weekend was ruined. Actually, I did say earlier there were no incidents in free practice. That isn't true. The one incident was Nico Hülkenberg ruining De Resta's car.
Oh, yes.
Which was repaired in as fast as possible, but not quick enough.
I recall.
Did he manage to get any laps on a Friday afternoon? He might have turned one or two laps.
I think he was out of the garage for about 10 minutes at the end of free practice too.
The guy was certainly on the back foot for the rest of the weekend. And I guess you can't hold a poor performance against him. Because it was Hulk who did it. Hulk,
he did the best he could.
The car. The disappointing thing about that is we like to see more Friday drivers. It's good to see new names and new faces out there. And when they crash and ride off the car, it's hard to get them back in.
They're not doing a very good job. I mean, Chandok only did those couple of laps.
Yep.
And he didn't.
He sent it into the wall.
Not showing Friday drivers in a good light. Although, it's worth saying that Daniel Ricciardo hasn't put a foot wrong and he's got a race seat. So
there you go.
So now we come to rate the race and to pick your driver of the day. Do whichever you like first. I don't mind.
I'm going to go for rate the race.
Okay.
I'm going to come right out and say it. And it's going to be a 4.
Same as Canada.
Yes. Because I think, I tell you what, ever so slightly, I mean, maybe like a 4.1 or something. Because
oh, don't start that again.
Right. I'll go with 4. But I will say at the end of the race, I felt better about myself after the Valencia.
Your self-esteem.
Yeah, after the European Grand Prix. It was like, after Canada, I was just really annoyed at F1. It could be such a shambles that you could end up wasting an entire evening because the rules weren't written correctly. And it doesn't take that much intelligence to write the correct rules.
Let's not go into it again.
With the Valencian Grand Prix, the rules couldn't have been framed any better to make it any more interesting. You can't really say, okay, let's just shoot Herman Tilke and stop him from making races because that would be cruel.
And illegal.
Also, yes, also not good. But then I wouldn't shoot him. I would just suggest it. And, you know, everything we've suggested so far has been fixed. So now I'm suggesting... No, I'm not suggesting... No. Don't do that. No, don't do that. I mean, technically, from a rules point of view, from the way the race, the whole weekend was run, there was nothing wrong with it. And whilst people were going to sleep in the race, we have the fact-by-fact box to keep us entertained. And that was created last year, which, you know, got us through effectively the tail end of last year because we were that bored in 2010. And, you know, the Fact by Factbox, there's so much going on, you never have a chance to be bored. So we managed to create our own Formula One entertainment. So I genuinely didn't despise this race at all. It was the best European Grand Prix I've seen at that circuit. The regulations, the DRS did make enough of a difference that we got a battle for second and third until at least two-thirds of the way through the race. The Spanish fans loved it because Alonso got second and he's never gone very well at that place. Generally, yeah, I'm good. A four, but with a hint of it was slightly better than Canada.
I gave Canada a five, and I'm going to give Valencia, the European Grand Prix, I'm going to give it a four, same as you. But I do think Canada was that little bit better. I think that the race in Valencia, it was the worst race of the year so far, but I do think that it has the potential, Formula One has the potential to be a lot worse. I didn't, I wasn't so much bored by the race because there were things to watch. Mm-hmm. The Alonso Webber battle was good. Four cars running basically on top of each other was really good to see. I mean, when was the last time that happened? In previous seasons.
Yes.
Never. Double DRS really confuses me a lot. I feel like I don't quite know what's going on.
Didn't make any difference. It could have been single DRS. Really, the double made no difference here at all.
And so I really agree with pretty much everything Lukey said in the voicemail earlier.
Mm.
You know, it wasn't great. It's the best one we've seen at Valencia. It was all right. It was a decent race. We've seen a lot worse. We could see a lot worse in the future. It's just that every other race this year has been amazing. And that overshadows it a bit.
So it's a four.
Yeah.
Okay, your driver of the day.
I think I'm going to give my driver of the day to Webber because it's good to see when he can actually fight almost as hard as Vettel. Clearly, still not in the same league, but it feels like he was doing better this weekend.
Mm, he kept him in his sights.
Yeah.
Last time his race at the circuit didn't end too well.
No, it ended quite high up.
Mm.
I don't recall if he had Kerr's problems this weekend. He probably did.
Gearbox overheated.
But he had gearbox problems as well. So the guy continues to be unlucky and still he managed third on the podium. So I think I'm giving him my driver of the day.
I am going to take your Mark Webber and I'm going to raise you times one Jaime Alguersuari.
Okay.
18th to 8th at the most important junction in his career thus far. That took some doing.
Mm.
I suspect a lot of teams are going to be looking at the stint he put in, the second stint he put in, to see what he did with those tyres to keep them alive. Because the Toro Rosso, it's not been terrible on its tyres, but it's not Sauber-esque in terms of looking after its rubber.
You know, we didn't mention that Perez was one stopping this race.
Also incredible.
Completely mental. It didn't seem to work out for him though. I mean, halfway through the race it looked like he was going to fall backwards. He didn't fall backwards as much as we thought, but he didn't make any progress either.
Good of him to try.
Yeah,
but the gamble didn't pay off, whereas in Jaime's case it definitely paid off, and it probably, speculatively I would say, saved his seat.
No, I think it really did.
Yes, the thing is, he had the confidence to gamble on a strategy at that time. If I was him, I'd probably want to play it a little more safe. And he didn't. He kept his cool and he brought it home, and then there were some much needed points. And I didn't see that much of him. I don't know whether he managed to any fantastic overtakes. Don't really know too much about it.
Sort of popped up out of nowhere, didn't he?
Yeah, he popped up midway through the race and he stayed there, and that was good. He didn't put a foot wrong. And he's still going to be there in Silverstone, and that's to his credit. He's in Silverstone because of the way he drove in Valencia, I'm sure of it, and that's why he's my driver of the European Grand Prix.
We'll start with some feedback about the feature we just did, Rate the Race. This is from Peter. He says, "Hi, So Podcast, just listened to the latest F1 debrief, very good as usual. In the early days, they lasted for the journey to work. Now they get me well on the way home too. First, on the remuneration front, I had been working out how much I should pay for your podcast as I feel guilty about consuming your hard work for free. I'd come to the conclusion you should give us some idea of how much the download costs were and how many people downloaded, divide one by the other and get a cost per person per show, then plus a bit for the HDTV and the fan and the sound screen. To contribute a small amount, I have downloaded the app. The F1 Minute app, everyone should get that. It's brilliant."
Did you say that?
I said that bit.
Oh, okay.
"Second, I know you like the debate about scoring the race, so do I, but you have already messed up the scoring scale, so I suggest good race, bad race. The races are sufficiently far apart for my small brain to forget the nuances and be able to compare consecutive races, let alone ones 6 months apart. So let's balance the race up in isolation and see which side of the good-bad divide it falls. Third, funny place to find the contact form hidden away in about..." I love Peter.
Right, Peter. Okay, a couple of points to address that. I'm ignoring the last one.
Well, but if people do want to send us a message, you can find the contact form on sidepodcast.com/about.
Oh, and so if I... Do you know how... Anyway, another time. I can't tell you how much a download costs because the cost depends on the length of the show, and we're in the middle of recording it. And so the shorter shows are cheaper and the longer shows are more expensive. And that's basically what it is. It costs a bit of money and it costs so much that we can no longer make videos, which is a shame. But we have a plan. There are ways around this.
And downloading the app is a good way of supporting us.
There are many ways to support
Buying my book.
You can buy Christine's book because that makes her very happy. I'm not really sure I get to see any of that, though, so I'm not going to encourage that behavior. There's the app.
Did you write any of it?
No. There's the app, which will provide a small income stream, but actually at the moment it doesn't even pay for itself, let's be honest. And then there's donations,
it's
which
fun,
are fun. It is fun. And there's the donations are the most significant way to make a contribution to Side Podcast because that money goes straight into making more podcasts and paying for hosting and things like that. So any of those ways are all much appreciated.
If you are interested in donating, there are some yellow buttons on the homepage, and you can just do a one-off amount that you feel... if you feel like it, or you can sort of subscribe to do £1, or is it $1? I'm not sure.
You can pick various amounts. Yep. And it would just be an ongoing cost. If that
you wouldn't even notice. I should say, since the last time that we did a sort of donations drive, I suppose you'd call it, asking people to do that, we did have a lot of people signing up for one dollar or
and that is appreciated.
And it does make a difference.
And the thing really is. Does. I mean, we haven't done anything worthwhile to really justify begging for more money. But just sometimes reminding people and sort of prodding people and going, do you know that you can donate to some podcast? And do you know it does make a big difference? And that's always worth doing. We should try and do that every show. But so thank you to Peter for bringing that up. And the other point he mentioned, which I've already forgotten, good race, bad race.
Yes.
Genius. yes, you too have forgotten the nuances. You can sympathise with that.
I've got half a jingle for that too. We could just play the good week, bad week one and I'll go race.
Right. Yes.
Good race.
Bad.
Race.
We could do it together.
Yeah.
yeah, okay. So how do you rate Valencia?
Medium.
Bad. Woman. See, you
that's
see,
why
Peter,
I do the scale.
That's why it's a scale, Peter. That answers your question.
Now, someone has corrected you, and I always love it when people do this.
Most people correct me after most podcasts.
Yeah, but you spent all of this podcast going, I was right, they're changing it, I'm brilliant. And now I'm going to tell you why you're not brilliant. Chuck says, first off, I love the show. Chuck.
I love Chuck already.
It's a good name.
I wish I was called Chuck. Can the C in Mr. C be Mr. Chuck?
Mr. Chuck. Anyway, first off, I love the show. I discovered it last season and have been an avid fan since. I have to take exception with something Mr. Chuck said in the latest show in which he was discussing the rain in Montreal. If I heard him correctly, I was concentrating on driving at the time, Mr. C said that NASCAR and IndyCar drive in the rain, even on ovals. That is patently false. NASCAR and IndyCar will throw a caution at the slightest hint of rain when driving on ovals. Slicks and rain do not mix. When they race on road courses or street courses, they'll race as long as conditions are safe. Even the American Le Mans series threw a red flag during the 2009 Petit Le Mans and never restarted. Also, NASCAR cars don't have windshield wipers. I'm sure you've heard from a lot of Americans about this, but wanted to set the record straight myself. Cheers, Chuck.
I have been corrected and overcorrected on this. Have we not talked about this in the show already?
Nope.
I will apologise. I'm sure I've apologised for it so many times, but yeah, I got it wrong. There was a demo run of a NASCAR car prior to recording.
It was when Lewis met Tony,
and his car had
windscreen wipers on it, and that fooled you.
Well, that's what. Anyway, yeah, I'm wrong about that. The thing is, here's my argument against Chuck, who I love already. Yes, Petit Le Mans had to throw a red flag and end their race, but that doesn't mean their cars are designed any better. I'm not looking for examples of other racing series that also can't race in the rain. What I'm saying is, they should design their cars better too, because I can drive in the rain. That's what I'm saying. If I can get in my car and I can drive up the road safely in the rain without crashing, then it must be possible to make a race car do the same thing because it's essentially the same technology and my car cannot be better than a Formula One car.
It's a lot slower than a Formula One car.
Well, then that's what they have to do then. Make them slower. Make the ride height higher. Give them windscreen wipers. Whatever you have to do, it must be possible to make a car run in all weathers. It's a car.
Finally, we have a voicemail from Andy who has some opinions on overtaking.
Hi, it's Andy Wallington. I just wanted to say, having watched Lewis Hamilton racing at Monaco recently, he just reminds me so much of the days and the race where Senna and Mansell were fighting each other and were inches away from each other on every lap, looking for a way to pass. It would be a shame if he gets penalised and reined in. He deserves to be on the field, and he's about the only person at the moment, I think, that's making it exciting for me. Everything else just seems a bit too clinical and a bit too focusing on pit stops and strategy, and that's not why I watch Formula One. I want to see overtaking. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
I would like to see overtaking too, Andy. Point taken. What I don't want to see is a driver take out another driver due to recklessness. And there's a difference between overtaking and crashing into somebody, and that is making the pass. And I would say in the last couple of races, more often than not, Lewis has ended up crashing rather than passing. I'm all for overtaking if you can overtake without writing off another car.
Yeah, and occasionally crashes happen. That's just the way of the world. But Lewis has crashed a lot recently, and it's just brought attention to it.
It's just the wrong side of the scales. You know, he's tipped the scales into the area of
too much
crashing. Too many taking out other competitors and ruining their race. And not enough getting past the competitors and getting on with his race. And that's really it. I want to see overtaking. We all want to see overtaking. I don't think anybody genuinely watches Formula One to see the strategy and only the strategy. You know, you'd have to be a very clinical person just to do that, and I don't think anybody wants that. We don't want to discourage Lewis from overtaking. I just want to discourage him from crashing.
Housekeeping.
Whilst I do keep saying this weekend in reference to the race in Valencia, that was actually last weekend, and this weekend was the Goodwood Festival of Speed.
And we didn't go.
No, we were going to go, but it's been...
It's expensive and we're busy, yeah. Unfortunately.
But lots of SidePod people did go, and
yes.
I think there are pictures floating around everywhere, and there'll be some blog posts and things. So keep your eyes peeled on SidePodcast for all the good stuff.
Absolutely,
from Goodwood.
Absolutely, yep.
I also want to applaud a couple of people, Lou and I think Kai, and anyone else who took stickers to Goodwood on our behalf and stuck them places.
Yes, during the week I managed to sneak off for an hour in the pub,
yeah,
with some SidePodcast listeners and contributors and commenters and daily writers and et cetera, et cetera. We all got together and we had a fine old evening, and I presented them with the debut of some F1 Minute stickers, which are lovely. They're the logo and the emblem of F1 Minute. And I just said, you know, here's some stickers. Have some stickers. Put them on whatever you like.
Like mine are on the back of my iPod.
And mine are on the back of my iPad. Mm. And that's sort of what I was thinking. Here's a few stickers. It's a bit of fun.
Decorate some stuff.
Yeah, it didn't cost very much money. You're lovely people. Have some stickers.
Do you know what they decorated?
I do. Do remind me.
So at Goodwood, there is always the big statue.
The monument.
Yeah, the big monument to whichever constructor they feel
it's
like.
Bigger than Goodwood House, but by and large it's a gigantic thing. That's the norm. Very tall structure.
Yeah, I didn't really like this year's, but that's by the by. Underneath it said something about Jaguar, was it? And underneath the little inscription at the bottom, there was an F1 Minute sticker.
There was an F1 Minute sticker placed there on Friday,
yeah.
And I think it survived the whole weekend.
It certainly survived overnight.
If you went to Goodwood and you were looking at this gigantic white monolith in front of the Goodwood House, and you walked up to it to read the inscription underneath and wonder what that orange dial was that was stuck beneath it.
That's F1 Minute.
That's Lou. Lou did
no,
that.
No, don't name names. They might come and get her.
Is it vandalism?
You're not very good at this stealth stealth sticker placing.
She's F1's Banksy. That's what she is. And not only that, they went farther. There was F1 Minute stickers on a Lotus Esprit and all sorts
on
of stuff.
On an actual car. It's incredible.
They ended up all around Goodwood. If you're listening to the show and you did see weird and wonderful stickers around Goodwood and you didn't have a clue what they were, it may well have been Lou and Kai. Oh, sorry. May have been Witness X and somebody, you know, whatever.
Witness Y.
Yes, they went out and about and they stuck some stickers around. So we'll have to get some more stickers printed and give them to more people and see where they end up, because it's a lot of fun.
Have we said enough at this show, buy the app and buy the book?
Buy the app and buy the book. That could be a new catchphrase. Mm,
should be the
podcast,
title of the show.
Buy the app and buy the book.
Yeah.
Are we into that much pimping? Have we done it too much?
It's just worth mentioning.
I definitely want to complain, though. Can I make a complaint?
Okay.
You know the last show we did, the podcast where you and I talk, F1 Debrief, we have this chat, you know, you and I have a discussion, we put it out to the world, people listen in. Sometimes, occasionally, we might ask a favour of the listeners. And I backtracked on a previous comment.
You had to eat humble pie.
I did eat humble pie, and I said, even though previously we laughed at the idea of leaving an iTunes comment, I really would appreciate some comments.
Some
iTunes reviews on the app and some Amazon reviews on your Kindle book.
Yeah.
Now, the Kindle book, we got some on the Kindle book. I must read out some of those in a second. But as far as I can tell, we got none at all on the F1 Minute app. And I'm quite upset by that. I feel spurned by the listeners, by the public. You know, they didn't take my suggestion on board like the FIA have been doing. You know, the FIA...
if the FIA can do it.
Charles is listening, but he's obviously not comment. He's not leaving a comment on the iTunes app either. But if you bought it, I would just like to know what you think of it. Is that too much to ask? Just tell me what you make of the app. I don't mind if it's a bad review. I want to know if you don't like it, because it won't get any better unless you tell us what you think of it. And if you haven't bought it yet, I'd really like you to download it. It's ridiculously cheap. It's so cheap, it's not even worth considering. You know, the cost of it is so benign. It's 59 pence in the UK, 99 cents in the US. Unless people take an interest in it and give us feedback, we won't do any more. And we'd like to do more because it's fun to do. And I'd like to get more feedback on it. So I'm disappointed by the response. But having said that...
a guilt trip. You and your emotional blackmail, eh?
Just, it doesn't take 2 minutes of anybody's time, does it? You know, if you've got time, you've got half an hour to give to this show. You must have 5 minutes to leave a comment. However, there were some nice reviews.
The moment where I go and hide in the corner?
On your book.
Yeah.
You not do compliments so well? You're not good with the compliments.
It's embarrassing.
Let me just read a couple out, because I think they're very good. If you were considering buying Christine's book, if you were wavering on whether or not it's your sort of thing, here's a couple that might interest you. This is from Al Weston, who said, "The short format of each entry makes it very easy to dip in and out of. The writing is engaging and well-researched." That's about your book, that is.
Yeah.
Do you feel uncomfortable yet?
Yep.
Matty F1 said, "I have never liked to read books, but for the first time, I can honestly say I can't put this down." You've made a reader of Matty. How cool is that? And finally, Loras, I don't know how you pronounce that. It says, the review says, "This book is a must for any F1 fan. Well written, captivating, and a joy to read." However, I will take points away from Loras, who hopes that you'll come up with a paper edition.
Yeah, that isn't going to happen.
Slightly missing the point of a Kindle book there.
That is very kind of everyone. We don't do paper. Very kind of everyone.
But good review. So if you were wavering, if you were even in any doubt whether or not this Kindle book is for you, do have a read of the Amazon reviews, because they might sway you. And you're making readers of non-readers.
Yeah, I am also working hard on the part two, because obviously the first part is a story for every day. From January to June, and right. So the second part is July to December, and I'm working hard on that right now.
I know you're working hard on that, because you're working so hard on it we couldn't get a Goodwood.
Yes.
Such is life. I'm sure we said this in a previous show, but just to reiterate, if you can read our blog post, if you can download Side Podcast, you almost certainly have all the equipment you need to read a Kindle ebook. You don't need a Kindle device. You don't need an iPad. You don't need an iPod. You can read it on your computer screen.
I am going to write a post with some, you know, instructions and advice for people, but I just haven't done it yet.
I would love it if Christine's book was your first ebook. That would make my life. And if it is, tell us. Tell us what you think of it. Leave an Amazon review or leave a comment on our podcast. It's much appreciated.
I think that's probably it for this week. Next week is the British Grand Prix.
F1's coming home.
It is. We are going to be at Silverstone, but not for any of the racing action. We're going to sneak in the back way, and we're going to the Virgin campsite to see Joe stuff.
This is exactly what we did last year. We didn't go to the race. We did go and see Joe, and we're doing it again.
Yeah.
If you're interested in coming along, it is open to everybody. You don't have to be a camper. You can buy tickets. I think if you go to joesayward.wordpress.com, you can purchase your tickets for the evening. There are bargain prices at £40 each.
£40, I believe.
And we've bought ours. We've got two tickets. We shall be there, and I think some other people from the Sidepod community will be there too. It'll be lovely to see you. We'll have stickers.